Okay, the recorder has started. The Son of God is coming out, and then they also have a movie coming out, Noah, about the flood. Yeah. So, all right, so we're at NTI Ephesians chapter 6, page 345 in the Kindle. How about the paperback? Same? 345. Yes. All right, here we go. Listen to me and what I teach you now. There's a typo in here. Does that say I am, I'm assuming? Mine says 21 am.
Mm-hmm.
Yours says 21 am?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Really? It's in the book too. That's interesting. I never saw it before. Listen to me and what I teach you now. I am the holy voice of wisdom, and I teach your process for forgiveness. As you think, you experience. It is through your thinking that illusion is made. It is through awareness of thought that you see what I teach. It is through releasing thought that illusion is let go. This is the process of awakening. As you let me, I take your hand and lead you through this process now. Everything is according to your own willingness. So, you know, that's a pretty simple little four-line process there. As you think, you experience, right? Which we talked about before we turned on the recorder. We were talking about how if you think of work as drudgery, then that's what you experience is drudgery, right? So as you think, you experience. It is through your thinking that illusion is made. If you're wondering how it gets here, there you go. It is through awareness of thought that you see what I teach. You know, and we were talking about that too, because, Jacqueline was saying she has noticed how she looks at the word work, and therefore that's how she experiences it. That's awareness of thought, right? And then we see that everything that Holy Spirit teaches is truth. We experience it for ourselves. And then it's through releasing thought that illusion is let go. So once you see what you're making up, see the meaning you're giving, then you start letting it go. And that's how illusion is let go, and then eventually the clarity and the seeing real come. So it's a pretty simple process, and it is just a matter of, you know, being sincerely and honestly aware of the meaning that we're giving. It's quite simple, in a way. Right. Simple in understanding, but in practice, because of the habits, it's not as simple. But it's not, you know, it's not rocket science, right? We don't have to know calculus to understand this or anything like that. Yeah. Verses 5-8. Awakening comes from the heart. So let the heart lead in all things. The mind is the great receiver, but with the heart, sort through that which is received. Let the heart and mind together give to spirit, so that the deliverer receives always through the heart. So remember, Ephesians is using the example of inputs and outputs, right? It comes in through the mind, and then if you choose to believe it or accept it as true, then it goes back out into the universe. It's a part of painting the universe, plus it recycles back to you. You know, so all of that is happening. And when it goes back out to the universe, that's called going out into spirit. And then when it comes back in, it comes in through mind. Well, this is saying before you send it out into spirit, discern with your heart. Is this something you want to send back out into spirit? Is this something you want to accept? Is this something you want to believe? So if we continue just to use the example that I've mentioned, that, you know, maybe we're defining work as drudgery. Do I want to continue to find work as drudgery? You know, I mean, can I live without work? No. I mean, you know.
Not in the United States.
Not even if you don't have a job, don't you still have to do dishes, make beds? I mean, right? Can you live without work?
Yeah, and you know, the idea under that is, okay, let me do it and see if I really hate it as much as I've told myself I hate it.
Yeah.
And then you get to do it and you're like, you know, if you're doing it without that in your mind, you go, well, this is fine.
Yes.
This is not hard. It's not hard. It's not taxing. It doesn't hurt me in any way. But you have to let go of the belief before you can really experience it. yes. way it truly is.
Yes, absolutely. So that's what this is saying. Discern with the heart. Before you do go ahead and take something in and say, you know, I'm going to believe this, ask, you know, look at it, question, you know. You know, one question that I used to ask, which I don't really see in many of the professional inquiry teachings, but it used to just be, what am I getting out of this? And the way I would ask was like, you know, am I getting any pleasure or happiness or joy or love out of it? And if I'm not, then why the heck am I feeding it to myself over and over and over again? Because one thing I've always known, even before I was on the spiritual path, I've always known that I want to be happy. Like, that's never been a problem for me. For some people, they don't actually even know they want to be happy. But I've always known that. So it was pretty easy for me to look at a thought and say, well, is that making me happy? Well, then why the heck am I messing with it, you know? And if it's not making me happy, then I might as well just let it go. Just let it go.
I had a boss that used to always tell me when I was hating to do something, like you were saying, okay, let's look at it and say, what's the worst case scenario that could happen? And when you went to put the worst case scenario, so it'll be, it was pathetic. Well, I'll do that again. So that, you know, I had made such a horrendous thing out of it. So that really helped.
Well, the day that I went to get this cast that I have on now, it's my second cast, the day that I went to get it, you know, when the guy was taking me in for the x-ray, he was just asking how you doing, and I said, oh, great, and we were having this wonderful conversation, it was fun, but when I noticed, when I left, I was sitting in the waiting room waiting for whatever I had to do next, and he was bringing the next lady in for the same thing, right? And he asked her, how are you doing? Oh, my God. She went in. and I noticed the difference. I thought, well, look at that. You know, I mean, her and I are in the exact same situation. The only difference is how we're choosing to look at it. And one of us is happy and having a great time, and the other one is miserable. And even the way she walked, kind of dragging herself, you know, you're just everywhere. And, you know, it's so funny because the situation was no different. So it proves it's not the situation. Yeah.
I feel like if you're looking at something through the eyes of a personal self, then it's going to suck, you know, because it's got the past and everything else. But like when you were saying, let me look at this differently, that's the intention is to move past the personal self. Maybe you didn't say that, but really that's kind of what it's doing. If there's a personal self doing it, there's this, all the baggage that comes with that personal self. All the history.
Yeah, Michael Singer in his book, The Untethered Soul, defines suffering as having to think about yourself all the time. That's his definition of suffering. You know, so, and if you look at that, you'll find that that's true. One thing that somewhere along the way I learned to do, which I'm not going to say there's not a personal self here, because I think there still is. So, you know, I'm not going to pretend otherwise. But it's different than thinking about the self, right? One thing that I've learned to do is look at life like a movie, like an adventure, rather than like my life. And, you know, even with things like this cast, that really changed everything, because I wasn't thinking about me and the things I can't do and the, you know, which is what this lady was thinking about. I was noticing, oh, look what the left hand can do. Oh, look, the left hand can't do that. Isn't that funny, you know? And it was just like watching, you know, just playing with whatever is here right now.
Yeah.
And that makes a big difference. At least for me it does.
Yeah, and like comparing that lady, she probably gets a real shot of identity with that misery.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
I'm sure.
You know?
Yeah, I'm sure.
That's probably a typical response for her.
Yeah, yeah. So this is saying again, you know, pause. Look. What do you want? Is this what you want? You know, and can you know, it's just asking us to be aware is really the popular word for that. Be aware rather than unconsciously following the habits, right? Which is, you know, what we've done until now. So again, let the heart be the test of all that is delivered, and you shall deliver only from the heart. Give as you would receive. Let this reminder guide your decision to deliver through the heart. For as you give, you shall receive. So as we mentioned with this Ephesians process, again, what happens is when you decide to believe something, make it true for you, you actually send that energy out into the universe, and it helps to paint the total picture. Well, that means you're giving. Whether you're giving, you know, some, oh my God, I hate this, or whether you're giving, oh, look at that, isn't that funny? You know, either way, you're giving. But then again, not only whatever you give, you also receive. It's going to recycle back to you. So this is asking you to look at it in both ways. And some people, the giving is going to touch more, and some people, the receiving is going to touch more. Either way, you might get touched. Like you were saying, you're motivated because of how you're affecting the whole, right? So for you, it would be, look at what you're giving. Do you want to give that energy to the whole? And you might say, oh no, that's not the energy I want to give to the whole. And so then you're able to start changing your mind. Somebody else, it might be, oh no, I don't want to receive that back. Right? And so it doesn't matter really which one it is, you know, because if you change your mind, you change your mind. You know, so. Go ahead.
She's taking the high road.
Yeah, she's taking the high road.
The other one is the flip side of that. I just don't want to deal with it. It's sort of there is a multiple difference.
Yeah, but it doesn't even matter which one gets you, you know? Just so you change your mind.
So much for altruism.
Yeah, altruism. Yeah. So sentence 4. In the process of God, there is no favoritism. The process is always the same. It is the process of freedom. Through freedom, receiving is requested by that which you give. Spirit is the great deliverer. So one thing that's really interesting about this, it says in God there is no favoritism, but what this means is there's no way you can escape receiving what you give. There's just no way. It doesn't matter who you are, president of the United States, enlightened master, criminal, you know, it just doesn't matter who you are. You all live by the same law. You are going to receive and therefore experience whatever it is that you're sending out through the belief process. No favoritism.
Request. It's yes. Just a request.
It's just a request. Yeah. So it's the same for everyone. I ask you to remember this. You are the free Son of God. Coercion can have no influence over you. You may decide what you want, ask for what you want, and you will receive in kind. Look, therefore, within your heart. Know what you truly want before you ask. In this way, you only receive blessings upon your true desire, which is of God. And of course, again, the way we ask is not, you know, our prayers, you know, now I lay me down to sleep. I pray the Lord for the red bicycle. You know, that's not how we ask. And that's where, you know, I could spend 5 minutes a day praying for peace. And then the whole rest of the day thinking about how much I hate you guys. Right? Which one am I really asking for? I'm asking for that experience of hate and that experience of attack and that experience of separation. Because the way I ask is by where I focus my mind all the time. So this is saying, be aware of what you're asking for. You know, really look at this. Think about it. What do you want? You know, start there. What do you really want? And then pay attention to what you're asking for. Are you asking for what you want, or are you, you know, going against yourself? Right? To me, it's very reasonable and very logical, but it does take paying attention. It takes awareness. Every thought taking up as desire is prayer. All prayer is answered through God, just as you have asked. Be mindful, therefore, of that which you ask. Watch yourself and know yourself as you watch. Pray also for your brothers in the true desire of your heart, for as you ask for them, you receive. All that you ask is given unto you. There's a couple different country western songs out. One's like from a year or two ago. The other one's more recent. Where in the country western songs, you know, the singer is asking for all these horrible things to happen to this person. And they're kind of funny songs. I mean, if you just listen to the horrible things they're asking for, you know, they're silly and kind of funny. But the truth is, you know, we all have done that at least at some point, walking around in our mind, wishing something bad would happen to somebody else. And this is saying, you know, whatever you ask for them, you're actually going to receive. Now, that doesn't mean if you ask for a piano to drop on their head that a piano is going to drop on your head. You know, it's not that specific. But it means that misery, that suffering, that sense of separation, you know, that sense of attack, that's what you're going to get. Because again, it's really the same thing, whether you think you're asking for it for yourself or whether you think you're asking for it for someone else, your mind is focused on it, right? What your mind is focused on, you receive. Verses 21 to 22. Your sight is your feedback on your prayers. You shall know by what you see what you have been asking for. If you are not joyous because of what you see, ask of God differently, by remembering who you are and how you ask. So, and this is more emphasized later in NTI, but what I came to see is that the way that I perceive is like my report card that tells me how well I've been doing at being aware of my own mind and aware of the thoughts that I'm believing or accepting as true. You know, so if I look out in the world and you know, I'm just frustrated by what I see and annoyed by what I see and, you know, really judging what I see, you know, that just shows that I'm not watching my mind, is what that shows. But if I look out in the world and I am joyous about what I see or just in peaceful acceptance about what I see, you know, that shows that I am watching my mind. And everyone knows, I think, that it really doesn't matter what the appearance is. You know, the simplest little appearance can annoy you if you haven't been watching your mind. And the most complex appearance you can be totally at peace with if you have been watching your mind. So it really doesn't matter what the appearance is. What matters is, have you been watching your mind? Have you been in awareness of what you're believing? Or have you just been unconsciously believing all this old habit stuff? And by the way, I will tell you one thing I noticed about myself. And, you know, you might be like me, but if you want to learn from me and not be like me, I think that's great.
Okay.
I learned I was much better at watching my mind when I was suffering. And when I became happy again, I would let things slip by, which set me up for the next round of suffering. So, you know, try to be good at watching your mind even when you're happy. Somehow we... In fact, what was the story I heard the other day? I heard a story. It was because I've been reading all these Sufi stories. Oh, I remember. Okay, here's a Sufi story for you. I may have even told it recently. I don't know if I'm repeating myself. But the Sufi story is, there's this guy walking down the street and another guy, you know, meets him. And the first guy is really grumpy. And the second guy asks why he's so grumpy. And he says he has this old burlap bag and he has like just a couple of old things, and he goes, this is all I have in the world. You know, what do I have to be happy about? And the second guy just kind of looks at him, grabs his bag, and runs off. And the first guy goes, hey, my bag, but he runs off. And he runs as fast as he can, and he runs through the woods, and he comes to a place in the street, the road that they're on kind of bends around, so he comes out ahead on the road, and he leaves the burlap bag in the middle of the road. The guy's walking along, I can't believe he stole my bag. And then he comes along, my bag! And now he loves his bag, right? Same bag he hated a minute ago, you know? You know, so and I can't remember why I started telling that story. Remember what I said just before that reminded me of the story? We'll have to listen to the recording later.
Remember to wash your mind in good times.
Oh, that's it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, remember to watch your mind when you're happy too, because what happens when you're happy is you're starting to lay the groundwork for when you're going to be unhappy. And then when you're unhappy, for some reason we watch our minds a little better, but why go into that suffering? Why not be happy with my bag, you know, and watching my mind then so that, you know, something bad doesn't have to come and happen in order for me to start paying attention, right? I don't have to wait for something bad to come along to pay attention. Unfortunately, most of us do that.
It's vigilant.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's very, very important. I don't know. Does the Course talk about that?
Yes. Yeah, be vigilant for the kingdom of God. Is that what it says?
Yeah. It may be, for me, it's, I'm happier when I'm watching my mind. And so it sort of goes hand in hand. So, I'm not sure yet. But nonetheless, I mean, vigilance is big on vigilance.
Well, you know, what you just said is actually very important. You said you're happier when you're watching your mind. It kind of connects with what Jacqueline was saying before we turn on the recorder about work and drudgery. A large number of people tell me how drudgerous it is to watch their mind. That's just a thought, too. Notice he can be happy when he's watching his mind. So that's just a thought, that watching my mind is a pain in the butt, yeah, and I don't want to have to do it. Right? So why, and does that thought serve me? No, of course not.
I'm surprised to hear that, because it is,
no,
I don't know, it's people. Such an experience of relief that, and I'm sure, I mean, obviously I'm not the only one, but
yeah,
I think, you know, would you agree with that?
I've experienced both. Actually, when I first started out, I think I saw it more as drudgery. But at some point in me, it shifted, and I began to love it. So it shifted. And also, another thing is I used to hate it when these emotions that we call negative emotions would come up. I hated it. And I would still go ahead and rest, accept, and trust, but there was something in me hating it. Later, I got to where I loved it. So when guilt would come up or when fear would come up, it was almost like something in me was saying, "Oh, goody," you know. So, and I think a lot of that happened in NTI, because if you pay close attention to NTI, Holy Spirit NTI is always encouraging us to embrace those opportunities to heal. And I think I just got brainwashed, and I started embracing them instead of hating them. Yeah.
I think though, when you start looking at these thoughts that have not been looked at also, when you start poking at them, messing around, you know, there's a reaction has an equal and opposite reaction, and it kind of, you know, there's a blowback that you do get. So I think that kind of goes along with it, because I know a lot of times when I've been looking, I'm like, I'm trying to look clearly, and it's just like, I got this brick in my chest, you know, and it's just like, God, I can't do this anymore. I got to, you know, take a break for a while or whatever. But,
I took breaks. I remember taking breaks from mind watching, because it seemed so hard. So I consciously just said, you know, I'm not going to do it today.
Yeah.
I think that's actually, if that's what has to happen, I think that's good. You know, to force yourself. You know, I think there's something in the Course, Jesus also says something about if the resistance is too great, you know, not to force yourself. I don't remember exactly how he words it, but that's...
He said go to the beach.
Is that what he said? Go to the beach.
Or have a cigarette. Yeah.
But it's interesting, because Inner Ramana, which for me is two books after the Course, right? So for me, Inner Ramana is more advanced than the Course. And Inner Ramana, Ramana says that if you're experiencing resistance, be gentle with yourself and do it anyway.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and that's because Ramana realizes that if you take too many breaks, you're just delaying. You know, and how gentle is that? You know, you're extending your pain.
And there's a lot of information that comes up in the resistance.
Yeah.
You know, so you kind of miss that opportunity. You know.
Yeah, but you got to know right where you're at. You know, so you got to know if you got to take a break. But I did learn to eventually just move through the resistance, and not have to back off because resistance was there. All right, so let's see. We know that our sight is our feedback, so sentence 4. Always you receive as you have asked. Watch, therefore, what it is that you ask. Blessings upon you. In order with your choice, blessings that are known shall be received. Amen. Amen. So that is the end of Ephesians. And we do have time. You guys want to continue to Philippians? Yeah, I feel like it too. Last week, even though we had time, it felt so heavy we stopped. But this week it felt almost like a review. So NTI Philippians chapter 1. I love the way NTI Philippians chapter 1 starts off, because when NTI was coming, I lived in North Carolina. And North Carolina is a very Baptist place, and people are always saying things like, let me pray about that. You know, will you pray for me? I mean, just, you know, prayer talk was like normal social neighborhood talk. And at that time, like a lot of core students, if somebody would say something like, oh, my grandma has cancer, will you pray for her? You know, I didn't want to tell my neighbor, no, I'm not going to pray for her. And yet at the same time, I was like, oh, I shouldn't pray that she get healed. That doesn't feel right. And I had this like inner conflict whenever anybody would ask me to pray. And yet that happened on a daily basis in North Carolina. So, you know, I had this pain going on. So I was really, really happy when NTI Philippians came, because the first part of it cleared up that whole prayer mess for me. Right? So, empty your mind now of all you thought was true. Accept the grace and peace of God as your true inheritance. I pray for you means I know who you are, and I know who I am, and I know what we are together. I pray for you means I know we are not separate, but connected through God, which is mind and spirit. I pray for you means I recognize our oneness, and I recognize that as I ask for you, I too shall receive. I pray for you is a statement of faith that all you see and sense and experience is not all there is. It is a statement of realization that effect is the result of intent, and intent can be affected by you. So the way that this was interpreted into my heart and has always been, it's never changed. Lots of things in NTI, as I read them, you could say as I mature, the next time I teach NTI, I'm going to teach it different, because it actually reads different to me. This has always stayed the same. I don't know if I got the highest understanding the very first time, or if I'm just not progressing. But this has always stayed the same. And what this says to me is, if my neighbor comes up and says, my grandma has cancer, will you pray for her? I can say, yes, I'll pray for her. And what that means is I recognize our divine self, and I'm going to be aware of that divine self for her, for you, for everyone, regardless of what happens. You know, I'm going to stay aware of the changeless self. I'm going to stay aware of the self that's at peace. Right now, you may be too upset to do that. She may be too upset to do that. But I'm far enough away from it. I can do that for you. And it just relieved me of that whole angst I had. So now when everybody says, will you pray for me? Yeah, I'll pray for you. You know, I'm very, very happy to do that. I can hold the candle of who we are for you right now, while you can't, because you're too caught up in the human drama. So I'll do it for you. And that's good enough, because we're connected. We're the same, right? So I can do that for you. And that's what this means to me.
That's a beautiful way of seeing it and realizing. I have a hard time with that too, with people praying and wanting healing and all that, because I'm not sure where I stand with all this healing thing. So I have reverted to something very similar to that. I just pray that they are able to feel how much God loves them and how important they are to Him, and for them to feel that love and that comfort in knowing that. And that's what I end up praying, you know, no matter what's wrong with them.
Yeah.
Because that other one just
did
the same thing.
Just doesn't feel good, does it?
Doesn't.
It's never felt right for me either, and it's interesting because this is one place where I see a split in the spiritual community that's a pretty strong split. I would call it the healers versus the non-healers. Not that there's a versus going on there, but I do think that there are those of us who think, you know, if healing happens, it happens, but if it doesn't happen, it's the same. Like, it's the same. And then there are others who feel, you know what, if healings happen at the mind level, it should also happen at the physical level. And that seems to be the split. And it's been there for a long, long time. It's been there since before the Course in Miracles time. Even when Ramana Maharshi was sick, if you read the books, you'll see people come say, you know, you're an enlightened master, why are you sick? You know, you know, so that has been there a long time. You know, should physical appearance reflect a healed mind by a perfect physical appearance? And inside of me, it's always said it can, but it doesn't have to. You know, like that, you know, that if you go looking for that match outside all the time, you're just not going to find it all the time, and you're going to be in confusion. And it's best just not to even look for it. But other people feel the opposite. So who am I to say which is right and which is wrong? I can only say what feels right inside of me. Yeah.
It just really takes your takes the focus off of the eternal.
That's what it feels like to me, and puts it on the form,
right,
as if the form matters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I tell you, you know, when I started on the spiritual path, which was in my teens, that's all the books were talking about. It was spiritual healing, it was,
yeah,
you know, body healing, and create your own reality, and all that other stuff. And, you know, until I read The Course in Miracles, it was just such a thin application, you know. It was just really just for the form. But it's helpful because it does show you how powerful, you know, all that stuff shows you how powerful your invitations are, how powerful your thoughts are, and all that other stuff.
Well, and I personally have experienced healings. So it's not like I don't know healings are possible. I do. So it's not like I'm sitting here, oh, healings don't happen. That level of fear needs to be healed also. Healings do happen. The question is, do they have to happen? That's a different question, right? Yeah, that's a different question. That, to me, doesn't feel right. But I definitely know they happen. I leave that up to Grace.
Back to what Tom said, you know, it takes the focus away. I think we need to say to ourselves and to each other about a self that is never harmed or touched,
that's
or destroyed,
right,
or whatever. Never, you know, that I think we need to say over and over.
Well, that's what I feel too, is focusing on that changeless self. And in fact, another thing that I feel is possible, but again, don't know this for a fact, how could I? But, you know, when people ask masters like Ramana Maharshi, well, how come you're sick? A part of me says, you know, I think grace sometimes chooses sickness to show that it unaffected the self. You know, Ramana Maharshi wasn't affected by his sickness, and that's one thing that everybody that was around him will comment on. They all noticed that. Well, how could they notice his unaffectedness if sickness didn't appear to be there? Right? I mean, so, you know, I think grace sometimes heals because we need to let go of the belief that the world is real and that the laws of the world are always true. So when that needs to happen, grace heals. Grace sometimes doesn't heal because we need to see that it doesn't matter. We need to see both, so both happen. And I think we should leave it up to grace. But that's just, you can throw that into the realm of opinion if you like. Yeah. So anyway, but that's what I pray for you means to me, is holding that light of focusing on the changeless self for you while you're going through something and you seem distracted by it. So that takes us to verses 12 to 14. There are no chains on mind or spirit. Therefore, there is nothing to fear. Likewise, there are no limits. You have been told that the world is not real, and you are the process of creation that is God. Now it is time to put the two together through practice. I have come to teach you that there are no limits on who you are. It is not the action that is important. It is the motive. Motive determines all things, for motive is purpose, and purpose is everything. You receive according to the motive you put out. So again, I could do the exact same thing for two different purposes. I could, you know, give money to the Center for Inner Peace because I want Nima to like me, right? And I hope she knows I gave that damn money. Or I could give money to the Center for Inner Peace just because I feel to give it and for no other reason. So it's not the giving of the money that really has to do with what I receive in my experience. It's that motive that I have behind what I'm doing. If I'm receiving because I'm hoping someone likes me, what's underneath that is the fear that they won't and I'm going to experience, you know, that kind of stuff. If I'm just giving to give, no attachment, I just feel like giving here, then I'm going to have an unattached, free-flowing, open experience. So it's not about what we do, although we do, we're all going to do, right? But it's not about what we do, it's about what we're believing, what our purpose is while we're doing it. Motive is the determiner of all things, because motive is purpose. You shall receive according to the purpose you put out. Therefore, you must ask, what is my purpose? For if you do not know your motive, then you do not know what you will receive. But when you know your motive and you know it has been chosen purposefully by you, you can trust that you do know what you will receive. For you know that you will receive according to the motive you have put out. So this is really, now that we've learned Ephesians, this is asking us to look a little deeper at what's the real reason I'm doing what I'm doing. And again, what's key to all of this is that you have to be able to do it without judgment, right? It's just no good if you're judging yourself when you find out you had a selfish motive, right? You have to be able to do it without judgment. We had a phone call today, one of my mentor groups, and we were talking about being parents, and one of the mothers was talking about how she just suffers when her son suffers and how she just wants to fix it and make him happy. And one of the things we talked about was that she doesn't really want to make her son happy. She wants to quit suffering.
Yeah.
She wants him to be happy so that she can quit suffering. And that's a selfish motive. Now that's important to see so that you can let it go. But if you judge yourself for having a selfish motive, when you see it, it's going to backfire on you, right? So you have to be able to learn, what is my motive? What am I doing? You want to look, but you want to look with that right mind. Look with that eye of awakening. I want to give differently, and I want to receive differently. But in order to give differently and receive differently, I have to be looking at what I'm really doing, right? And so you have to develop that ability to look without judgment. Verse 27 to, I have 310. I don't think so. 31, I'm sure.
It's 30.
Is it 30?
And then the other one is for the sentence one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Faith is by no means dead, for you put faith in whatever you believe. But I ask you to consider this. Is that which you believe, that which you have chosen based upon the foundation of your motive? Do you have a foundation without a building and a building without a foundation? So what this is asking, I'm going around telling you guys, hey, I want to awaken, or I want to be only love, or I want to know thyself. Damn, I hate that guy over there. You know? So it's really asking me, am I consciously kind of saying I want one thing? Well, I'm still kind of unconsciously acting in a different way. So my chosen motive to awaken, to be only love, to know thyself. I mean, I'm on the spiritual path, you know, so at some level I've chosen it. That's my foundation. But where's my building? Am I still building grievances, building hate, building attack, building defense? It's saying, it's really asking, are you aligned within yourself? Or are you still disaligned? You know, look, watch, discover. You know, start, you know, so this is where we're starting to get, I would call, very serious. Now we've crossed over. Once we hit Ephesians, I think we cross over into what I call advanced NTI. Yeah, when we've been.
Yeah. The universe recognizes lip service.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So this is asking us to really start paying attention to what we're truly doing here. So, sentence six, if your faith is split off from your motive, you know, you still believe you should be able to control everyone and they should do what you say, that's your faith. If your faith is split off from your motive, this is surely what you have, a building and a foundation that are not together. To receive according to your motive, your building and your foundation must be one. Put your faith with your motive in all things, or your motive is not the motive you put out. For through faith your motive is delivered. Motive without faith is dead. So again, my stated purpose and my watching my thoughts and choosing what I am going to accept and letting the rest go, it all has to be aligned. I've got to get working within myself together. My mind, my spirit, my heart, you know, it's all got to be working together. If it's not, I'm still going to have a chaotic experience. Yeah. So it's no good just to say I want truth. Oh, wait. I know. To say you want the peace of God is nothing. To mean it is everything. That's what this is saying, right? So we need an assignment, and I think that a pretty good assignment might start being, you know, just start to kind of look. And first of all, you might want to, if you don't know what your motive is yet, what your purpose is, in MPP we call it spiritual aspiration. That's what she's learning about right now. If you don't know what your motive, your purpose, or your spiritual aspiration is, you might want to start by asking. And one way to do that is just say, well, why am I here? You know, why in the heck do I go to NTI on Tuesday nights instead of staying home and watching TV? You know, why the heck do I spend time meditating instead of jogging? You know, or, you know, why am I on the spiritual path anyway? There's got to be something that's attracting me, pulling me in this direction. So what is that? Can I put that into words? And whatever words you put it into for you is fine. But when you put that into words, that is your purpose, your motive, your spiritual aspiration. So first get that. That's your foundation. Discover what your foundation is. And if you know what your foundation is, you can take it one step further. Start noticing if you're always discerning by your foundation. If before you believe, accept a thought, is it in alignment with that purpose? If it is, you accept it. If it's not in alignment with that purpose, you let it go. Just kind of watch yourself and see how well you're doing. I know none of us are 100%, so, you know, don't expect that. But just start paying attention to how often are you really making choices based upon your purpose, and how often are you just going on habits. And just notice. So step one, what is your purpose? Discover that. And then step two, how active are you in using your purpose and discernment? And with that said, I will turn off the recorder and we can have a little bit of silence.